Yeah, this is the ins and outs of opening a B&B, a bed and breakfast. It can actually be an Airbnb, it could be a VRBO, it could be a guest house, it could be a full-fledged bed and breakfast that's approved by your city or your town, where you're actually serving a full course breakfast in the morning. It's anything that's considered a short-term rental, and it can be short-term by the room, or short-term by the apartment, or short-term by the entire house. And so the difference is, and I just give everybody a little bit of an overview of folks that are coming on. We've got Nate, Michael, Pete, folks are tapping in. We've got Carrie, Annis, we've got several folks. Annis Deria from Royal Oak, Michigan. Welcome, we're glad you're here. And so all the zoning is kind of the same and a little bit different depending on your area. So if you're gonna do any type of a short-term rental, just make sure that you do your homework. And we're gonna talk about that as we talk to John, and Adam is going to jump in as well. And we're going to talk about all those things. But anyway, whenever you think about a short-term rental, I just want to give you an overview. We've got long-term rentals. And by definition, that's anyone that's going to rent for more than 30 days is a long-term rental. It's usually a year. And then it goes into a month after that is a very common type contract for a long-term rental. A midterm is at least a minimum of 30 days, but not quite a year. So it could be somebody that just needs a unit for 3 months or 6 months. If it's a traveling nurse, oftentimes they just need the unit for like 13 weeks. That's a very common assignment period for traveling nurses is 13 weeks. And then short term is anything less than, and the official definition is less than 28 days. Now, I know everybody says it's less than 30 days, and so we always think of it as less than 30 days, but by definition, in Ohio, it's less than 28 days, because occasionally February only has 28 days. And so if somebody is in the unit more than that, they get tenants' rights. And so that, it changes. I just was talking to a gal the other day. She has somebody in her short-term rental and they're like, hey, can we extend for another week? And she didn't have anybody to come in. So she was like, sure. She's like, hey, this is easy money. And hey, can we extend again? No problem. No problem. No problem. Finally, they passed the 28-day mark and she's got folks now scheduled to come in. And now this guest is saying, well, you know, we're not going to leave and you have to actually give us a 30-day notice because we've now been here. We're now considered a long-term tenant. And so you now have to give us a 30-day notice. And so she's going to end up losing her other short-term booking because she allowed this couple to just keep extending. She did not know about that 28 day. So again, that's a zoning thing. It's kind of built in there. It's Prego. It's in there. It's all in there. So you have to do your due diligence. But those are kinds of things that we want you to learn by listening in on a call like this. You get to learn those little tips and tricks and put those little things in the back of your mind. Like, I know there's something about 28 days. Let me find out what that is. And so do your research. So that buyer beware when you're going to buy a short-term rental. Just make sure that it's in an area that you can do it. Make sure that the numbers work for you. And above all, make sure you don't let anybody stay more than 28 days. Check them out and check them back in so that they don't have tenants' rights like a long-term renter. So again, I want to say welcome to everybody. We've got six folks in the audience now. If you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the chat as we're talking, and we'll try to keep them answered as we go. It's hard once we pass a particular maybe subject or topic to go back to it. So if you have a question, just drop it in there. Now, I am Kathy Benner. I am the one that started this particular free meetup, and we turn this into a podcast when we're done. So you can find it on all of your favorite podcast channels under the ins and outs of opening a B&B. You can also find it. We have a Facebook group, and we also have a meetup group. So there is lots of places where you can find us. Adam is my co-host, my co-mod, and I'm going to turn it over to Adam in just a moment and let him tell you who he is and what he does. And then we're going to go on and interview John tonight. Now, John was a guest for us once before, but we are excited to talk to John again because he has added a bunch of stuff to his plate. So we can't wait to hear about what he's added. So first off, I'm going to turn it over to Adam. And Adam, tell all of our listeners what it is that you do and how you're connected to this particular group.
Sure. Hi, guys. So my name is Adam Messmer. I'm with LFG Lending. I'm a loan originator there. We are a mortgage broker. We specialize in the type of loans that investors need, specifically hard money, which is something that you'd use for rehab, short-term money that is used to buy something that needs a little bit of tender love and care. Then we'll also do DSCR lending, which is low documentation lending. That's where we use the income and the expenses of the property to qualify the loan rather than your personal income. And then finally, we'll also do commercial lending. So that's where we'll look at, you know, everything going on in your entire financial picture in order to give you the best rates possible. So we do that in most of the 50 states. There's a couple states out there that we don't work in, such as the Dakotas and Nevada. But other than that, we're active in most other states. So I will put my contact information in the chat to be if you'd like to discuss any options. Specifically, we have a lot of funding options for short-term rentals. So that's, you know, if you're looking to buy your first one and you want to figure out how you're going to pay for it, that's something that I can help discuss with you and give you some great options there if you want to get beyond just a Fannie and Freddie loan. Aside from that, I currently own a short-term rental. I'm about to not own a short-term rental because I put it on the market and it is going well. It'll be on the market, I think, this weekend. God willing, the creek don't rise. We got the floor people in there. We got the cleaners in there. And then the stages are coming Friday. So hopefully we'll be able to list that this weekend and get some traction. But we can talk more about that later. But yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Yeah. Now, Adam is in our, I'll call it our investing community. I network quite a bit around Columbus, and I see John and Adam all the time out there networking with all the folks. And so, yes, we do buy and sell and trade and all kinds of goodies. So again, just know that if you get into a short-term rental, it doesn't mean that you're stuck with it forever. If you decide you don't like it, it's definitely worth a go if you think you might want to try it. I love it. Mine are doing very well, but yet again, I have actually sold some properties that weren't performing the way I wanted them to perform, and there's nothing wrong with that. So don't feel that you're stuck if you do it. Don't feel like, oh, if I do that, I got to live with that forever, because you don't. And so just keep that in mind. Adam put his information in the chat. So for those of you that are on your computer, I don't know if it's the same on your phone or not, but you've got three little dots next to the chat there where it says everyone. And if you click on the dots, you should have a way to save the chat. It's the very top thing under those three little dots, and it says save chat. So you don't have, if you're someplace where you don't have a pen and don't want to write it down, you can save the chat. Or you can look at the chat, do screen print if you're on your phone. If you want to save Adam's information, just do a screen print. That way you have his info. And again, come back here every month. You can find us on Facebook or on Meetup, and you'll find all of the dates that we're on and who's actually going to be our guest for that evening. So we've got John Steyer. John was with us once before. I even physically drove over to John's house twice, and we went through, you know, his bed and breakfast, his Airbnb. It's beautiful, by the way. And so I'm going to have John tell us a little bit about his background before he ever decided to open a B&B. And so, John, tell us your background.
Sure. Well, thank you, first of all, for having me. And I look forward to our conversation here. So my name, again, is John Steyer. I grew up here in Columbus. I grew up in Grandview. You know, graduated from high school, Grandview Heights, went to school, Indianapolis at Butler University. I moved back to Columbus in 2009, and I'm here to stay. My wife is, and I have built a home here, and literally, and we don't plan on moving. We're here for good. We have a 2-year-old daughter and another daughter on the way. So
congratulations, by the
thank
way.
Thank you. Appreciate that. We're very excited. So I worked in the restaurant industry for 10 years. When I moved back to Columbus, I was managing a restaurant and I loved it, but I came to the point where I was either going to do this for, you know, this was what I was going to do, or I needed to make a career change. And it's a tough industry to be in. And I was getting older and I was like, I gotta switch. I gotta be done. So I got a real estate license because I was interested in investing in real estate. And shortly thereafter, I started working in property management. So I managed long-term rentals.
Okay, now, did you work for someone else at that time? It was a door management company. You actually worked for a management company.
So in the state of Ohio, to legally manage property, you either have to own it, work directly for the owner, or manage under a brokerage. And to be a broker and own a brokerage, you have to have 2 years plus X number of transactions, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So you cannot start out right away as a broker owning it. You can own a brokerage, but there has to be a broker that works and is a principal broker for that brokerage.
That meets all the criteria. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you have to be you have to be licensed in the state of Ohio, and there's a lot of legal implications and liability and blah, blah, blah. So, I worked for a broker, in a brokerage managing long-term rentals, mainly single family homes and small multifamily properties. So I was able to gain a lot of knowledge about real estate, working with investors, maintenance stuff, really just kind of like I was in a lot of properties and, people don't call you when everything's going great. They call you problems. So there's a lot of problem solving and, figuring out, hey, how do I fix this? What do we do? On and on. So it was a crash course. I got to learn a lot quickly because by the time I decided I was ready to transition solely into sales, I was managing about 500 doors.
Wow.
So, I mean, there was a team, but I was, involved. But long-term rental management is tough. And it can be hard work. And so I realized that hey, this isn't my passion, but I loved working with investors and I really enjoyed doing sales, which I was a licensed real estate agent. I was doing sales during that time, but I wasn't able to focus on it. Well, I wanted to give that a go. So after a few years of management, I decided I'm going to, just delve strictly into sales and, walk that path. And I'm still, licensed. I still work with investors pretty much exclusively. A lot of my clients are out of state. Some are in state as well. And I actually, as of this year, have gotten my broker's license. And thank you. And opened my own brokerage.
Yep. Congratulations again. I love that.
Thank you. It's a lot of work, but it's exciting as well. It's kind of a new, we're on this new path here. And as part of that, we have started our own short and midterm management company. So we leveraged our own, systems that we've put in place to manage our properties to then extend to other people as well. And, take care of people that maybe don't want to do it or can't do it because they're out of state or whatever reason. We have our own properties that we manage, and then we also manage for other people as well.
Now, how far, what is your radius? How far out will you manage for someone?
So
from where you're located?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't been asked to manage a property in a location that we wouldn't manage yet. Legally, I can manage anything in the state of Ohio. I probably maybe not your best fit if you're talking Cleveland or Cincinnati or, that far out just because of the distance. I will say that we do have a couple properties in Newark, which is about 50 minutes from where we are. And we have no problem with that. So I would say maybe about an hour out from Columbus is the radius in which we would feel comfortable taking on a property.
Okay. So for those of you that are listening, put in the chat where you're actually located. At least maybe what is the closest major city to you, to where you are. Now, prior to that, if we back up a little bit, how did you decide that you even wanted to start with the bed and breakfast or with a short-term rental? What made you decide you wanted to do a short-term rental?
Great question.
Amanda's Grove City. Okay, Amanda, you're in. V's in Columbus. Yep. Lima.
So as I mentioned, I worked with investors and most of the clients that I worked with, and still to this day, many of the clients that I do work with are interested in long-term rentals. And they're interested in investing in Columbus because we've got great job growth. We've got great population growth. There's a lot happening here. It's a great place to invest. And a great piece of that has been the appreciation we've seen over these past few years, which has happened nationally, but you know, we've been one of the hottest markets for a few years now. And so I kind of, you know, about 2 years ago, I kind of took a step back and assessed where we are in the market and where we're going or where we're trending. And I don't know about you guys, but most people who invest in real estate are interested in cash flow. Mm-hmm. And I know I am in my investments. And as we were trending in, with this appreciation, I said, you know, if this keeps going, we might get in trouble cash flow wise, especially because we're appreciating at this rate and rents are going up, but they're not going up at the same rate. And so as that gap widens, it's going to get tougher and tougher to find that cash flow. And all that came to fruition as soon as rates jumped up, you know, about 6 or 8 months ago, however long it's been now. And so we got to the point now where, like, if you're trying to leverage funds, if you're trying to, you know, finance and invest, you got to get creative in how you're going to get that cash flow. We're still a great appreciation market here in Columbus, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I expect that to continue. No one can foresee the future, of course, but I mean, everything's lined up, in my opinion.
Well, we have a lot of great stuff coming into town.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to bring more and more folks in, and everybody has to have a place to live. So real estate is, I don't think we're going to see a dip in our market here like maybe some areas might.
I agree completely. And, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Everyone's got a place, have to have a place to live. I don't personally think there's a better vehicle for wealth building as far as securities go, other than real estate investing. Mm-hmm. There's just so many avenues in which you can make money and build wealth. So I'm a huge fan of Columbus and investing in Columbus. I invest personally in Columbus, and I get a lot of people that are interested in doing that that come to me to do the same thing. So anyways, back to my story. About 2 years ago, I said, how can I continue to service investor clients who want to invest in Columbus because of all those reasons, but they still are interested in cash flow if this shifts to where we kind of are now? And the answer for me was furnished rentals, short and midterm rentals. You know, there's just a higher opportunity for cash flow because the numbers are higher. You know, you can charge more. You know, I know really you charge per night, but you know, if you're talking midterm per month. And so that was the answer for me in my business. And I started working on it then to build up to where I am now. And we've just kind of started this new path that we're on, you know, with the brokerage and the management company.
Okay. So now we've got some newbies in the audience. They haven't purchased their first one. Some of them may not even own the home that they're living in. They might still be renting, but they know they want to get into real estate. And getting into short-term rentals is oftentimes a little easier than even getting into purchasing some long-term because of mortgages and that sort of thing. Because, you know, there's that whole conversation about arbitrage, which we won't get into right at the moment. But my question to you, John, is when you decided that you wanted to do a short-term rental, and I already know a little bit about your story, but how did you find that perfect unit? What did that look like for you?
Sure.
For a newbie that's listening in that says, where do I start?
Well, our situation is a little bit unique in that our first short-term rental is actually in the lower level of our home. Mm-hmm. So for us, it was, we had intentions and plans to build a home here in Columbus for years. We had been saving, working, doing all the things necessary to build a home. It was our long-term plan. Once I got interested in real estate investing, I kind of felt like a little bit of FOMO, like I missed out on the opportunity to house hack. Mm-hmm. And that for me was such an exciting idea. And for people who don't know, house hacking is essentially living in the home and having tenants or guests pay effectively your mortgage or a piece of your mortgage, your living expenses. So a lot of people do that in like a multifamily. I was then at the stage in my life where I wasn't really interested in making that. And this is, for lack of a better word, sacrifice. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't want a little, you know, two bedroom.
You didn't want roommates.
I didn't want roommates. So what we kind of did was we combined the idea of, hey, we can still build our home, but we can build it in a way that we can still generate income from it. And the way we decided to do that was through a short-term rental that's actually in the lower level of our home. So when we built our home, we designed it with purpose, and it's effectively almost three units. So we have our living space, and then on the same level, we have a mother-in-law suite, which we still use as living space for our family. And then it's a walkout. So you walk out to ground level, but it's lower than the front of the house. And that lower level is a short-term rental. And it's a three-bedroom, one-and-a-half bath, entirely separate unit with its own entrance and, you know, private patio. And, you know, it's brand new, essentially. And so that is the way that we decided house hacking would work for us, in that, you know, eventually, as our family grows, we don't always have to rent it out. We don't have to have it on Airbnb or VRBO or wherever. We can, you know, expand our family into that space. And if we want to, then we can shift to the mother-in-law suite being a short-term rental. You know, we're not going to generate the same income because it's a smaller space, but it's still an option to, you know, kind of keep the drive alive if we wanted to do that. So that was kind of our path to our very first short-term rental.
I love it. I did the same thing. I have a four-bedroom house. Mine's an historical house in Kanawha, Winchester, Ohio, in the historic district. Well, preservation. We're just one little area away from the historic district. Very walkable. We have a great little downtown, lots of cafes and coffee shops and bands out on the street. You know, we love it. We often say that we get to live here, and it's a place where a lot of people come to vacation, and we actually get to live here. So we love it. So we actually turned three of our bedrooms into individual room rentals, and I rent by the room instead of by the entire unit. And so right now I have three separate families. And tonight we have a full house tonight, three separate families. We have a gal all the way from New Jersey that's attending a quilting conference. We have another gal that came in from Colorado for the same quilting conference. And then we have a couple that just arrived. Are you ready for this? From Israel. And I haven't had a chance to chat with them yet. So we have a full house tonight. And so that's my house hack. So for those of you that are listening, there's more than one way to do the house hack with the short-term rental model. So that works for me. It works for John. Now, Adam, yours is a totally separate unit. Am I right? You're not. That's,
yeah, I have. So I house hack in a duplex. So it's a true duplex.
Okay.
And I was lucky enough to do that. And then my short-term rental was a separate home entirely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We bought in 2013 at a great time, and the house rapidly appreciated. And by 2019, we had a bunch of equity. We used a home equity line of credit for the down payment on the house that we bought that we turned into a short-term rental. So effectively, we were able to finance it 100%.
See, I love that.
Awesome. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there's,
I love it because, yeah. Well, when you're calculating your cash on cash return, it's infinite. It's the best.
Yep. That's the best little number
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah. So for those of you that are listening, pay attention, take some notes here. So now, so you kind of created your own short-term rental by basically when you built your house, you included that lower level and that and the mother-in-law suite and all of that. And so now you have options, which is really great. Mm-hmm. But every area is a little different. Did you have a lot of zoning issues that you had to figure out?
So other than just the home build itself, our area, there are no issues or zoning issues that we had to overcome or deal with. That being said, we do have another short-term rental that is in the city of Columbus. And there are, you know, there's permitting and restrictions and, you know, taxes and lodging taxes and stuff that I'm sure Adam knows about as well, that do need to be dealt with. So we did, you know, go through the whole permitting process with the city of Columbus, and we do pay, you know, the lodging tax every month and all that. And I'm happy to kind of delve into that more if you'd like, or kind of talk about our second short-term rental as well.
Yeah, because again, for those of you that are listening, don't be scared off by that. All it is it's a bed tax. That's the common name for it. But it's a bed tax that gets paid to the city. And the city, if you can go right onto the city website and you can see how the bed tax is basically divvied out. And in Canal Winchester, I too am approved through my city to rent my three rooms, and I too have to pay the bed tax, which is fine. And so in Canal Winchester, they voted, because it goes through our city offices, that 50% of it goes to our basically our travel, our visitors bureau. It's our Main Street USA program, and 50% of the bed tax goes there, and they put on festivals and you know, three different festivals a year, which brings folks into town which need a place to stay. So I'm kind of getting that bed tax back in guest, because they're advertising the city's festivals, and then when the guests arrive, they need a place to stay, and then I get the guest again, and then I get to pay more bed tax. And so you see how it just kind of feeds each other. The other half of the bed tax that Canal Winchester receives, they give it back out to the facilities such as mine in as grant money. So we can apply for a grant if we want to do, but it has to be for the purpose of bringing more guests into the community. And so I actually received the very first grant that they gave out in Canal Winchester. I received it to actually write a course on how to open a bed and breakfast. And they paid me grant money to write that. So that just gives you an idea of some of the things that happen with the bed tax. So don't be afraid ours is 6%. Do you know what yours is, John?
5.1.
What is it?
5.1.
5.1. Ours is 6. So again, it's not a lot, and it does the community a lot of good. So I don't say that I have to pay bed tax. I say that I get to pay bed tax. So just a little different twist on that. So now that you have the B&B and you're starting to get some guests, how do you do your bookings? Where do you get these guests? For some of the newbies that are listening, they're like, well, how do people get to know about you? How do you get these guests? And then I'm going to read in the chat here. View says, I own my own home, had considered renting the bottom half of my home and still do once it's more organized, but I really don't want the roommates. Plus I just learned in a tax class I took that you can take full advantage on Airbnb new tax codes, being in a separate unit other than where you live. So again, you can't take the full benefit if it's in the same building. But again, it depends on, it's the whole picture. It's how much cash do you have to buy a separate unit? Maybe all you have is a room or two in your house to get started. So don't let that scare you off. But yes, there are tax advantages to having a whole separate unit. And so anyhow, so instead you get the bed tax for Airbnb in your home that you live in. Anyway, in Canal Winchester, whether it's a separate unit or it's a room in your house, we all have to pay the percentage on the room rate as bed tax. Doesn't matter whether it's a room in my house or a separate unit here. As far as now, I get some advantages by having the room in my house for my income tax. I have mm-hmm. some tax advantages, because I can deduct a part of my heating and cooling and my part of my Wi-Fi, and because it goes throughout the whole house. So I do have some income tax advantages. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to John. John, how do you get your bookings for your bed and breakfast?
So there's multiple platforms that we use to market and, you know, reach guests or potential guests. Everyone knows about Airbnb. Most people know about VRBO. We are also on some other websites and platforms, property specific. Not everyone is on all these, but some of, you know, it depends on the property. We're also on Furnished Finder, which is more geared toward midterm rentals. And then we are also on a site called Landing, which again, it's more corporate rentals.
Okay.
And then finally, we also have our own direct booking website, which in the long run really benefits both parties because we're able to charge the guest less, but also make more money because of the fees that Airbnb and VRBO charge. We're able to find a sweet spot in the middle where it works for everybody.
I love that. Now, how about with all those different channels, are you using a channel manager?
Of course. It would be impossible if, I mean, there'd be no way we'd be able to manage all those calendars without having some kind of error create double bookings for us. So we are definitely using a channel manager and we run our entire business through that channel manager, through communication, calendar management, accounting, the whole gambit. We use Guesty, which is it's one of the more premier. We use the professional version of Guesty, and it's one of the premier channel managers. But there is a million of them out there. They all pretty much do the same thing. It's really going to come down to preference, especially if you're worried about your own property. You have one or two units. You're going to be fine probably with anything you go with. Because really they're all in competition. So they're all doing pretty much the same thing. It's just going to come down to what you like working with the best. We need a little bit of more horsepower in the garage because we're working with, you know, multiple properties and we have owner clients. But, you know, if we were just doing our own thing, when we just managed our own properties, we didn't use the professional Guesty. It's not worth the money.
Yeah, I'm using a program that's very inexpensive and mine is called CloudBeds. And the two that I looked at was Little Hotelier and CloudBeds. And then I did briefly look at Guesty, but again, the price point was better for me. I just had the one at the time. And so I'm on CloudBeds. And again, for those of you that are brand new and you've not done this before and you go, what in the heck are they talking about? All it is a software program that you can have all these different channels. You can have Airbnb, VRBO, booking.com, Expedia, hotels.com, Travelocity. You can have all of those booking sites out online and you just simply go in and open an account and you upload your pictures and your description of your I'll call it Airbnb, but you can upload that on all of those different channels. But what happens if folks are on two channels at the same time booking the same unit for the same night? All of a sudden you have a double booking and it's up to you to handle that. And that gets a little crazy, a little stressful, shall I say. And so if you have a channel manager, it's where you go in and buy a software program or rent. Mine's $130 a month, but mine comes with the channel manager, the front office, and the website. The whole thing is $130 a month for me. And so you connect all your channels to this channel manager, and now I added the front office with it. So now I just open up one program and I can block rooms. I can move people around. I can do all of that right there on my front office channel manager. And I don't have to tap into all those channels anymore. It takes whatever I do and pushes it backwards out to all those channels. And so when somebody books on a channel and it comes into my channel manager, the channel manager automatically in real time pushes it back out to all the other channels and blocks it off. So I don't get any double bookings and it's done in real time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're talking microseconds because it's all electronic. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, they try to sweeten the pie, you know how it is, upsell. And so they said, you know, we'll even give you your own free website and you don't have to pay any commissions at all if somebody taps through your website. And so I bought the whole package through CloudBeds. So just know that they're out there. You can do your due diligence. You can just search for channel managers, front office platforms. But if you find the channel manager, most of them will have the rest of the parts and pieces right there on their sales page. And so just explore that. But know that if you want to cast your net a little wider onto more OTAs, you need a channel manager because it would be way too much work for you every time you got a booking to go into 10 other channels and block that room off. And about the time you get it all done, the person changes their mind and moves their booking. Then you got to go back in and change it all. You don't want to do that. So just get a channel manager and just make that a part of your business. So I love that. Now, John, you've got the channel manager, you've got the booking sites, you're set up, you're ready to go. What does check-in look like? What do your guests get from you to check in?
So through our channel manager, we've set up automation to make sure that our guests have a great experience. So before they check in, they're getting information about the property and their stay, including, the property address. And we also have an online guidebook that we send to all of our guests before they come so that they can use that to plan their stay. And that includes, local restaurants, attractions, things they might want to do, shops, that kind of thing, as well as, any information that we think they should have about the property. We also, extend them the invitation to connect with us and let us know anything that they think we should know, like, hey, we've got an 18-month-old or something. And it's like, okay, great. We'll make sure the crib's set up for you, or, whatever it may be. So that, we want to just because we sent you an automated message doesn't mean we don't want to communicate with you as well. We try and provide the guest the best experience we can. So that's a big piece of that. So they're going to get an automated message just saying, like, we're excited for your stay. Here's the information you need. Here's the guidebook. And then we also say, like, on the day of your check-in, you're going to get check-in information. We use, smart locks, electronic locks, and we update the codes for each one of our guests for their stay. And the code is usually just the last four digits of the guest booked, their phone number. So, every guest is going to have their own unique code, and that's for their security and for ours. So they'll get a message that day that of their booking that says, hey, this is your code. Here's how you enter. You're going to go to this door. You're going to, enter your code, blah, blah, blah. So that, they understand, and feel comfortable, like, all right, I'm going to get in. Because honestly, for the guest, that's probably the most stressful time of staying in a short-term rental is like, how am I going to get in? Is this going to be a headache? Am I going to be beaten on the door and no one's going to answer? Everyone's heard the stories of, like, I couldn't get in. It was late at night. I'm just stranded out here. We want to prevent that. That is, like, number one, because that's the first experience too that they're going to have with the property. We want to make sure that interaction is seamless and they're able to get. I mean, even if you go stay in a hotel, you go up to your room and the car doesn't work. It's just like, come on. We don't want any of that. So, we work hard to make sure that that's never an issue for our guests. And then, once they're there, all of our units are full units. So they have, free reign of the unit to kind of do whatever they need to do, get in there, take a shower, drop your stuff off, relax, or, check out the guidebook to hit up one of the local restaurants.
I love it. I love it. I too do the smart locks. That's the only way to go. I also added them to the actual doors inside, which I'm going to segue for a minute for Amy. Amy said she owns her own home and she's wanting to split her home where she can do part of it for herself, like an owner's suite, and part of it for the guest. That's exactly what I do in my home. And I know I've been to John, so I know he has the access between his home and that lower level as well, because he can also use that lower level for his family if he chooses to down the road. And so what I did is I simply just put a door with one of the smart locks in between what is the owner's area and the guest area. There's just a locked door there. Mm-hmm. And so that way the guest can't come over into the owner's suite. Now, again, I have to punch in a code to go through, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm smiling all the way to the bank. That's fine. they just paid me. I'm good with that. Yeah. So John, how about you? Do you find it a hassle to have a locked door between you and your downstairs suite?
No, it's never been a concern for us at all. It's just a door, It just happens to have a deadbolt. Like, there's no issue with that in my book. We just lock it when the guests are here. And, if we need to go down there in between, we can just unlock it and head down. And it's not even a problem at all for us. But that is the way to do it. I mean, you just put a door there, install a deadbolt, do a smart lock, or even just do a regular lock on the, with the knob on your side, be okay too. Just as long as the guests can't turn it, they're going to have a key. access. But you want to make sure it's a door if you're separating out the space. You don't want to wall it off. That's not going to help your property value. And you're probably going to, you potentially run into zoning issues if you kind of create multiple units in a single family home that you don't have access to both sides. So it's an easy fix.
Yeah, and so my laundry, just for those of you that are listening, my laundry is actually in the owner's suite side. And so I want access there because once everybody checks out for a particular day, I simply leave that door open as I'm flipping the rooms and doing the laundry. And I don't relock that door again until it's time for the guests to check in. Anis wants to know, channel manager, one price for how many units? Mine's a flat price. And I think I'd have to go back and look. I'm not anywhere near, but I think I can have up to 50 units before my price goes up. Do you pay by unit, John, on yours?
We do. We do pay by unit. For us, it's, it's not cheap. I want to say it's about $60 a door, but I know we were paying a lot less than that when we were using they call it Guesty for Hosts, which is like their, more homeowner based, and so I don't remember what the exact amount was, but I mean, I've seen it like $20 a door. It just depends on who you use and what they provide. You just do a little search out there. There's so many of these things out there and the pricing is all different, but it's usually a sliding scale. The more units you have, the less they'll charge per door. So it can be affordable. It's up to you how much you want it to be a piece of your business. So that like you may be okay with paying a lot less just so you have the calendar function, you don't care about the automated messaging or, whatever else that might be included in a more expensive product. And, it's imperative that you don't get double booked because you're in a world of hurt once that happens. And that's what these things do. And then everything else is icing on the cake. It's just systemizing. How much do you want to systemize your business? And you can power through on your own with messaging and this and that as well.
Yep, I agree with John. I started off with just the channel manager. I went back up probably 6 months in and added the front office where I could block a room and it would block it on all my channels. Starting off, I just had the channel manager, but I had to like manually block off if I wanted, a date. The rooms all closed down for a day. I had to manually block them off. And now I can just do it once on my front office and it pushes it backwards. So you can add, but yes, definitely get the channel manager. Amy says she loves the locked door idea and she plans to block or lock the kitchen also. Yes, my door is on the guest side of my kitchen. So yes, my kitchen is locked unless I just choose to get up in the morning and unlock the door and let them through. So it gives me more control. It says, thanks for the tip about zoning issue with a wall. Yeah, that is a good point. Now, Carrie wants to know, we're going to discuss interior design, the look, the decor, maintenance, all that sort of thing. Yes, we are. But the first thing before we get to that point, I want to ask John, what does your morning look like when your guests get up in the morning? What do you provide, or do you provide anything at all for them?
So as far as like food goes, we don't provide anything like that other than like a coffee bar. So all of our units have like a full coffee bar with everything you can need. It's a Keurig and then drip coffee, creamer, sugar, and we provide like K-cups and things like that. As far as other amenities go, I mean, we do try and provide like toiletries, eye masks, earplugs, linens, towels, that kind of thing. But we're kind of more of like a full unit with a full kitchen. And we let them, decide, hey, we're going to be cooking breakfast or maybe we're going to go out for breakfast. So we focus more on the first B than the second, I guess you'd say.
In the full kitchen, though, you've got all the pots and pans and all of that in case want to cook there. They've got all the utensils that they need. You're just not supplying the actual food pieces.
Right. It's a full home. It's a full kitchen, fully, suited out and furnished. We have a dining table. There's everything you could need. So we don't, we let them decide if they want to cook a full English or not. So
Okay. Now, Adam, how about you? Yours was a full house. Did you provide any food? I know you provided all the kitchen utensils in case they wanted to cook.
Yeah. We had a full kitchen in ours with coffee, coffee creamer, that kind of thing. But we also had like, I think we had like a crock pot in ours. And okay. We also like, we had like a full kitchen. And then somebody, this is a funny thing. Somebody left a smoker at our house. So like somebody, I don't know who, like brought a smoker because, you know, when you're going to Columbus, Ohio, and you're staying in an Airbnb, it's like, you got to bring the smoker just in case, like a big giant metal smoker. So I have one.
And they left it behind.
They left it behind. It's sitting in my yard there.
Okay. Okay.
I think it'll be a perk of the house.
Yes. Who knew?
When I list it.
Yeah. Now, I actually am a little different since I just rent by the room and I don't give my guests access to a kitchen so they can't cook. I will offer to put something in the owner's fridge if, you know, they bring leftovers in from dinner one night. You know, I'll say, sure, I'll keep it for you. Just let me know when you'd like it in the morning when you're leaving or whatever. And then I try to help out. I'll put things on ice for people. You know, if they've got a freezer bag that they're carrying and they need their little ice freezer bags refrozen, I'll put those in my freezer overnight in the owner's suite and then give them back to them when they check out in the mornings. So I try to make my schedule where I'm kind of available because I know they don't have access to my kitchen. And then I'll try to do special requests. If somebody says, oh, I really only want protein in the morning, so I'll have maybe hard boiled eggs on the continental, but I do put out a continental every morning. I have a baker's rack in my entrance parlor. And I do pastries, a big bowl of fruit, yogurts, hard-boiled eggs, you know, just a continental. I do flavored coffees, flavored teas. All of that is already brewed and it's there waiting for them. I have to-go cups. They can grab and go if they need to, if they have to catch a flight. But it gives them something and they can choose to partake or not. You know, sometimes they're meeting family for breakfast and they just want their first morning cup of coffee. But then each room also has a little 4-cup coffee maker, just like all the hotel rooms that you see. It just has that little miniature coffee maker in each of the rooms as well. And I provide the coffee, the creamer, and I just buy from Amazon. I buy the packs. It's got the little pods inside, you know, for the four cup pot. So it looks very much like a hotel room. And every one of my rooms has 2 double beds and each room has its own bathroom. And so once you're in the room, it almost feels like you're at a hotel. It has that same feeling with the bathroom and the little coffee station and the 2 double beds. Annis wants to know any bad experience, damaged furniture, for example. You know, have you had anything? And then we can talk about Carrie wanting to know about the interior design as far as what kind of furniture do you put in these? How do you maintain it? What happens if something gets damaged? John, what do you think?
You know, we've had some, you know, minor damage, this and that. I think we had a lamp that a guest accidentally broke, fell off the table. You know, they paid for us to buy a new lamp. It was like $30 or whatever, you know, it wasn't anything that was like crazy. As far as any other damage, I mean, I think that there's been like rings, like drink rings before we were able to get them off. One time we had kids that had kind of like, you know, they're maybe coloring on the table and the marker got a little bit, you know, outside the lines, able to clean that off. We haven't had any major damage or like extensive, you know, oh my gosh, we're ruined, you know, experiences. Everything was able, you know, amicable and able to be, you know, figured out. As far as bad experiences go, we've had like one experience where people tried to throw a party and we said, hey, it's gonna happen. Like basically you gotta go. And they left. It kind of ended up okay because they didn't even touch the beds. You know, they were here for a minute and then they were gone and we kept their money because we're not getting another booking by that point. But you know, it wasn't the end of the world. That's really been it. As far as, you know, you get the good and the bad every now and then, but I mean, majority, it's great. People love coming to stay with us. We have 5-star reviews. You know, and it's overall, it's a great experience. My wife is involved in the business. I haven't even talked about her as well, but she's really more guest facing than I am. And, you know, she loves doing things for the guests. Like, she always knows why they're coming in. And like, she's always like buying, like, we had someone here that was for a graduation, you know, last weekend. And so it's like, she got them a you know, graduation card, just little things like that. She always likes to do. Mm-hmm. And I would say 99% of our experiences are great with our guests.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Occasionally you'll get a bad apple, but it's usually mm-hmm. nothing major. We had somebody that wanted to smoke in the room. And so we had to get rid of the smoke. So I do recommend, for those of you that are listening, go on to Amazon and buy an ozone machine. Follow the directions, though. You can't be in the unit while it's working, but it will take care of any odors, whether they be pet odors or smoke odors or vape odors or even heavy perfume odors, anything that you think might be a turnoff to a guest that's checking in the next, you know, couple of hours. And you, the room's clean, but it doesn't smell the way you want it to smell. You can take care of that with an ozone machine. They're not very expensive. $50, I think, on Amazon. You can get a small one, just a room size one, because oftentimes you don't need a real big one. But anyhow, just make sure you have that in your arsenal. I don't know if you've run into that at all, John. Have you run into that, Adam?
The smokers?
Any kind of an odor that you had to get rid of before the next guest came in?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the beauty parts of my investment. Was I had a property manager, a full-time property manager. So I've been in that house. I've been in for 3 years, and I've been in that house like maybe 2 hours in 3 years, like total. And an okay. hour of that was waiting for the cable guy when I first bought it. And before I decided on a property manager. So to answer the question, yes, I think we have had issues with people smoking, and it's, you know, every product that is out there to try and get that stink out, because it is, nothing bums a guest out more than walking into a house and having it smell like an ashtray.
Especially if they're not smokers.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the problem. So that's why an ozone machine is a must have if you're going to do a short-term rental. So just keep that in your arsenal. Just know
I'll
that.
Say if you are going to run an ozone machine, make sure you're out of the room when you do it.
Or out of the entire unit, depending on, yeah. on where you're going to run it. Yes. Follow yeah. the directions. The directions yeah. will tell you that. You cannot be in the unit because it's harmful to you breathing. So make sure that you get the heck out of Dodge when you're going to run it. But it is something that's a must have if you're going to do short-term or midterm rentals. Now, what about your linen and all those supplies? Do you have a favorite place that you buy all that stuff?
We buy everything on Amazon. Yeah. You know, it's you can buy in bulk, you can buy exactly what you need, and it comes to your door. And the pricing,
like the same day, if you need
right. a lot of times it's the same day, and you just can't really beat that service. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's really, I mean, we buy everything on Amazon, and it's to the point now where, like, if we're going to stock a unit, we know exactly what we need, we've already bought it before. A lot of us will have it in stock already, and we just keep a stock closet. And when we're starting to run low, then we just buy more and put it back in the stock closet. But no, Amazon, I mean, once you know you like something, it's so easy to repurchase it and it just shows up.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, we do our little coffee pods, we do our comforters, our sheets, you know, right. all of that, our to-go cups, all of that stuff. Now, how about, again, this is a double-sided question, because you not only we're doing, you know, cleaning for your own unit when you first started, but now as a management company, you're doing cleaning for other folks. Mm-hmm. For the newbies that are starting, that they're not going to go with a management company, maybe right mm-hmm. off the bat. What would you recommend to flip the units to clean their Airbnbs?
Well, we started out with our first unit, we were cleaning it ourselves, and that didn't last very long because it just wasn't the best use of our time. And it's, you know, it can be taxing, mm-hmm. You know, because we, you know, you got to do a good job. It's one of the most important pieces of running mm-hmm. a short-term rental or an Airbnb is the clean. If the clean isn't spot on perfect, you're done, because nobody wants to live in a gross place or be in a gross place or feel like, hey, this isn't our space. You know, there's other people that stay here day in, day out. Nobody wants to experience that. So the clean has to be A+. So, you know, it's a lot of work. For a while there, we were cleaning it ourselves and collecting the cleaning fee, and just as that revenue was just adding it to the pile, essentially. But we quickly realized that that's not in the cards for us long term. And now it would be impossible with the units that we have. So we do hire cleaners to clean our properties, and the guests pay a cleaning fee. We don't view that as a revenue center for our business or for our owner's business. The reason being, we would never want someone to not book with us because they feel like the clean is an unfair amount or, you know, otherworldly costly. And that is a complaint that I've read from people online that, you know, oh my gosh, these cleans are the cleaning fee is out of control. I never want to hear that from one of our guests. So we don't make any money off the cleaning fee. We just pass that along to our cleaners, because we want to make sure that they're getting, you know, that they're doing a good job and they're getting rewarded for that and compensated for that. So we use a service to book and manage our cleans. It's a third party software. It's called Turno. And it connects directly to our channel manager again. So everything,
so they can see when a guest is checking out. Yeah.
So, you know, we have our preferred cleaners that we work with. And, you know, when we get a booking, then a cleaner can go on to their app and book the clean so that we know, hey, when this guest checks out, there's a clean that's going to happen. It's on their calendar. It's on our calendar. We've already agreed on the price. Everything is squared away so that, again, we're systemized. We know the property is going to get clean. We know it's ready for the next guest. Really, the way that we view it is you're not paying to clean up after you leave. You're paying to walk into a spotless clean unit. And, you know, if you don't want to pay the cleaning fee, okay, that's fine. We won't clean it before you come. Not that we would ever do that or that would happen or anything. But, like, that's, you know, we want you to really enjoy your experience and have an A+ spotless unit to walk into. And so that's how we handle the cleans. We work with preferred cleaners. Another thing with Turno, you can find cleaners on the app. So that's how we found all of our cleaners, through the app. Not everyone works out. Not every cleaner works out. So, you know, you might have to go through some before you find the ones that you're very happy to work with.
Very good information. Yes. So make a note of that. And John, if you get a chance, maybe put that in the chat. That's going to be, that's probably one of the biggest, problems because a lot of times folks will get into trying to do short-term rentals while they're still working a full-time job. And it's hard to, you know, to get over there and do all of the cleaning and get the unit ready for the next guest. Mm-hmm. Carrie mentioned that the reason she asked about design is that she is an interior designer. She spent 13 years designing for HGTV. Carrie, mm-hmm. We need to hang out with you. So anyway, she says that, you know, just that she would love to design and help make Airbnbs successful and in demand. So there you go.
Yeah, I can speak to that a little bit.
Okay.
So we do use, for our units, we use a third party designer who, you know, we connect with the owners. We started out doing it ourselves, and it's a lot of work. It obviously can be done. If you've ever moved or furnished a home, then you've got experience doing it. But, you know, it's kind of crazy the things you build up and you don't realize that you own, you know, over the years of your life, that when you want to do it all at once from nothing, it's like, hey, I got to buy spatulas. There's so much stuff you need to buy. A first aid kit, you know, just this, that, and the other, an iron. I mean, how often you go buy an iron, you know? So it's just, you need everything. And
well,
so
the question is, how often do you actually use an iron? So yeah, it's not even on my radar because most of my stuff is wash and wear.
But, you know, we're providing a service to our guests. So they need to have all that stuff available to them if they need it. You know, people that, you know, for example, the iron. I don't iron a lot of my clothes in my daily life, but if I'm going to maybe a wedding and I need a place to stay, guess what? I need an iron. I last time I used an iron was when I went, I was in an Airbnb and I, you know, I was going to a wedding. So just for instance, that kind of thing, all that stuff needs to be available to the guests. And so you've got to put all that in there. And for us, it was a business decision that, hey, we're not going to be the best people to do this for our owner clients. And so we're going to give them the best and connect them with a designer, stager, furnisher who does all that. And to be honest, she does it more affordably than we could do because that's what she does. And so we love working with her and we're always happy to, we view it as a team member of ours. She just happens to be a third party, you know, her own company, but there is definitely, that is out there as a job opportunity for someone who works in the design space to, especially if you have, you know, a staging, like for, you know, real estate sales background, the person that we work with, she does that as well. You know, that whole thing can all tie in together and there's a need for it because it's a lot of work. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I get it. Now, how do you handle problem guests, John? Have you ever had a major problem guest that you had to personally handle?
I mean, yes, not often, but you know, it's going to be case by case and, you know, instance by instance. We did have one time where the people that were staying, the person that booked it never showed up. And that was an issue for us because we don't know who is in our home and the liable party is not there. It was a bit alarming. There, in the end, there was no issue, but we weren't happy about that situation because, you know, it's a contract essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I'm going to be staying in there. I'm responsible. And, you know, I feel like that is a situation in that maybe those people, there's a reason that they weren't able to book, who knows. And so we, you know, we let them know like, hey, this is unacceptable. You know, and you know, these people that we don't know who they are, they have to go. And so, you know, it was a little stressful, but everything was fine. You know, but in the long run, this is hospitality.
Right.
And, you know, it's more than being a landlord. That's property management, and being a landlord is one piece of this, but you have an additional piece of this, and that's hospitality. So it's your responsibility. Or if you hire a manager, your manager's responsibility to handle that situation, to, you know, find that balance between making the guest happy, but also protecting yourself or protecting your property, or in my case, if not myself, then our owner clients. And it's, again, it's case by case. You have to be able to draw a line and say, no, that's unacceptable. We can't allow for that, whatever it may be, if that's the case. But you know, at the same time, your job in this is to make that person happy. So if you're able to do it, then you should.
And sometimes it just needs to have a conversation.
Right.
Yeah. Between you and the guest, and just get more clarity on what's going on. And sometimes once you have the conversation, you're like, oh, yeah, you're fine. But again, right. It's your home. Especially if you're going to do the house hacking where they're connected to where you're actually living. And I think it is important to know who's staying there. And so, that's a good advice. Carrie also says, how should I connect with Airbnb owners to get her services out? Carrie, if it were me, I would probably jump on Facebook or, you know, something and get into some of those groups, mm-hmm. Get into the short-term rental groups, because that's when somebody is first thinking about getting into that business, they start connecting in those groups. And so that's where you're going to find some newbies, is hanging out in those short-term rental groups. Now, for those of you that are listening, when you tap into those short-term rental groups, don't let them scare you off, because they will have all their horror stories on there. They'll say, this is what happened. What should I do? I have been doing this since 2016. I haven't had any horror stories. John, have you had any that's really been bad?
No, nothing that has been made me feel like I've made a mistake doing this. I'll tell you what, this is one of the best things I've ever done is doing the short-term rentals. It's awesome. And to hit back on the cash flow, that's the reason why. It's great. Mm-hmm.
Yep, I agree. So, John, I want to come back to you one last time. Tell us all about now what you're doing now with the management. How can you help some of these newbies that are maybe in our audience or that are going to listen to this podcast later? How can you help them? What exactly can you do for them if they want to get into this business and they would love to be like Adam and just hand it off to a management company and say, yeah, I want to be in the unit twice.
Right. 2 hours he's ever been in it.
Yeah.
We're a full service management company. So we handle everything top to bottom for our owner clients. The goal for us, for our clients, is that truly passive income, that mailbox money. We don't want you to have to worry about anything at all. So we manage the property from top to bottom, and we also handle all the hospitality aspects of taking care of your property and the guests. We deal with any maintenance, we deal with landscaping, we deal with, we can help you get it furnished with the third party designer that I discussed. And then all the hospitality aspects of marketing, dealing with the guests, making sure the guests have a great experience, the cleans, the turns, even like changing your furnace filter, we're going to do that for you. The goal is that you don't have to worry about anything at all, except making sure that you're paying your mortgage and your taxes and your insurance and that. That's our goal. And we can be as, hands-on or off as you want us to be, in dealing with an owner client. If you want, us to call you once a month or whatever and tell you all about it, we're happy to do that. If you say, I don't want to hear from you unless it's burned down, we can do that too. We also, we handle all the accounting aspects of, if any expenses, we're going to have a statement for you once a month and disperse your funds once a month. You're going to get a line item, report that has every expense, all your income. You're going to have, all your receipts that you're going to need for all your taxes, at the end of the year, provide you with a 1099. You're going to have a portal online that you can go on and you can check your vacancy and your occupancy. You can see your old reports, the whole gambit. We really like to just be everything that we can for our owner clients and make sure that they don't have to worry about anything. I will tell you, short-term rental management is not passive income. There is work involved. Mm-hmm. We like to make it that for our clients.
I get it. Now, Anna says, first of all, Anna, tell us, where are you located? Because his one question, and John, in your opinion, how would you grow from one unit to, let's say, 10 units? What would be your best advice? And then the second part of his question was, how do I find a good management company and what are the prices? Yeah, well, Royal Oak, Michigan. Yeah. So how would Annis find a good property management, short-term property management company? How do you find someone like you, John?
Sure. Well, there's multiple different avenues that I would look into to finding that out. And it kind of depends on what you're looking for specifically. If you're looking for a top dog in your area that they, manage 100, 200, 500 units, a good start would be airdna.co. And they're going to list the top management companies in your area, in your market. And it's just based on these people have this many units, these people have this many units, check that out. And that's also a great tool for, pro forma information on, what to expect cost wise. Now there's a little bit more nuance to that. We don't have the time to get all into that, but, that would be a great starting point. Again, the Facebook groups, would be another great place to look. Also, investor networking groups, talk to people who are there. Who do they use? Do they like their manager? Do they not like their manager? That's probably going to be your best bet, because if you trust that person and they don't seem like an idiot to you, well, then listen to what they say, I would also, I would start there. And then, you know, determine, do you want one of those, a big management company? Do you want maybe more mom and pop? And then within management companies, there's different amounts of levels of service that they provide. You know, there's national management companies that they are in 100 different markets, and, you know, you could go with them. So it's, there's a full gambit. I would start with networking groups, Facebook groups, and then check out airdna.co as well.
Now, in your, go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to jump in. I just wanted to reiterate something real quick that John said that is so important. And I try and tell this to all new investors, and that is the networking groups are going to be one of your number one sources of information and human resource. Like, you're going to find all your labor at networking groups. Mm-hmm. You're going to find the people that can help you with the more technical stuff, whether it be lawyers, accountants, designers, you know, anything. Like,
mortgage,
they are
brokers,
just a mega. Mortgage brokers. I mean, you only really need one mortgage broker, and you've already got my phone number. So, but I mean, aside from that, like, I mean, it's so important to get out and go to networking events, because the thing, and even if you're like a shy, timid person like me, it's just, it, you go there and you just, you say, hey, I'm interested in real estate, and everybody wants to talk to you, because it's a team sport. When it comes to real estate investing, you're only as, your net worth is your network, to say the old lame line. But what, I mean, it's totally true.
Mm-hmm. It is true. I agree. And I see these guys out all the time. So and it works. And that's how we met. Yeah. We all met networking. That's
Well, you guys knew each other already, but I met you both on the same day at, I think it was like a CE event. And then there was like drinks afterwards, and it was a great time.
And then for a little bit of trivia, realized at Adam's birthday that I had known his grandfather. And his grandfather and I were really close friends when I was like in my 20s, and I had never put that whole story together until I met Adam's dad. And just through conversation, I'm like, wait a minute. And here Adam and I had known each other for a while, and Adam was even my co-mod, my co-host already on this call, before I even realized that we had yet another connection. So so networking is very important. Okay. Opinion, and then we're going to go because we're past the top of the hour already. How can folks go from 1 to 10?
You know, there are so many paths to that, that it could be a whole podcast in itself, or a whole, you know, conversation. I don't even know where to start with that, because I mean, like, I would say, give me a call and I'll talk to you for an hour about that.
Because it really, it has a lot to do also with the person asking the question. It has a lot to do with what is your financial situation? Where are you located? You know, what is your risk factor?
What are your goals? Like,
what are your goals? I mean, there's so many questions that's hard to just answer. But in a nutshell, if I had to answer that, you know, with an overarching answer, I would say, start off with getting, like John, get into a home that you own, and house hack, you know, or like me, you know, rent out a couple of rooms, get started. And then once you start getting some equity in that property that you own, leverage that equity with maybe with a line of credit. You know, you can then get some cash out, get a hold of Adam. And if you find a property that's maybe already operating as a short-term rental and it's got some great receipts, great returns, you know, Adam can even maybe get you a mortgage. So now you've got some cash equity that you can use as down payment. You can get a mortgage, and you can get into that second unit, and then into that third, and into that fourth, and just leverage the equity that you have along with some great mortgage products out there. And Let the tenants buy your property. Now, the only caveat that I would add to all of that, and this is my opinion, and please, John and Adam, jump in if you don't think I'm right on this one. Make sure whatever property you buy, make sure the numbers work as a long-term rental. I'm not saying you're buying it for long-term, make sure the numbers work. If all you could get out of that was a long-term rent price, do the numbers still, is there still enough cash flow to pay the mortgage, the taxes, the insurance, all of the things that you have to pay? Make sure that you don't go under because you've based it on these great short-term rates that you're going to get. Because if you all remember when COVID came through, everybody's events got canceled and everyone that had short-term rentals had no guests because guests weren't traveling, you know? And so just make sure that your numbers work as a long-term rental and then everything is good news from there. If you want to then do midterm or short-term, it's all good.
Yeah, okay? It's all about the exit strategy. I mean, you have to have an exit strategy that is going to save you on the back end if you need to, you know, operate in that, whether it's, you know, yes, long-term, or if you sell it, you feel like you can at least break even. You definitely always want to have some kind of exit strategy. I mean, there is risk involved with any business venture. And, you know, this is no different than anything else in that sense.
The last question is it good to have units in different states? Again, depends on your risk tolerance. because if it's something close to where you live, or if it's something in your own house and, you know, your cleaners don't show up, or, you know, you can just roll up your sleeves and do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And if it's in another state, you can't do that. So it depends on your risk tolerance and your networking skills and your team, putting your team together to know that you have folks you can depend on. That's why I like someone like John, who is doing the management, because that puts the ball in his court. And if he has a cleaner that doesn't show up, he's working with a company that has other cleaners other than just one. If you just go out and hire Sally and she's going to clean and she's sick one day, and then what are you going to do? You know, so you have to have your team in place. And so sometimes the best team is one that you've hired out to a third party to handle for you. Sometimes that's the best team player on your team because you can count on them to show up. So just keep that in mind if you're going to spread out into different states. And the only other thing, if you're going to have units in different states, is you've got different zoning and different, you know, property taxes and different bed tax. And you just have a lot of different numbers that you have to keep track of. So if you're going to do that, make sure you put some really good systems in place. And one of the best systems is to get a channel manager, because a lot of times that channel manager will take care of all those reports for you that mm-hmm. you need to pay all those taxes, and you're not having to do it manually. So thoughts on that, Adam, John, any thoughts on that?
I think that, you know, in any investment, the idea of diversification is a good one. So in that sense, diversification into different markets could definitely be beneficial, just, you know, to protect yourself. But I completely agree with what you're saying about, hey, you know, learn a market, learn how to be successful in that market. And then once you've mastered that, maybe then you can start thinking about other markets. But I wouldn't say that, you know, oh, I'm going to buy one here, 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 and just hope for the best is maybe the best mm-hmm. strategy when you're starting out. If you, you know, got something down and you feel like, yeah, I know this game, all right, I'm going to learn a new market and become a master of that, then that might be something worth pursuing. But I would kind of like focus on being successful in one market, and then maybe you can expand.
I agree with that. Yeah. So it's a good idea to have units in different states, but get your sea legs first, get your systems in place, get your team so that you have it all covered, so that you're not hanging out there to dry.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily have to mean you should only invest in your local market. It may not be the best market. I work with clients that have never stepped foot in Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. but they trust me to take care of them. And, you know, we vet a property and we go through the whole thing together to make sure that, hey, we expect success here. And, you know, their market, they can't afford to do what we're doing here, because they might be in a really high cost of living area where it's just not an option. So they look to go out of state to be successful with their short-term mm-hmm. rental investments.
And again, sometimes it's hard to answer those questions on a call like this because everyone's background is going to be different. Again, your risk tolerance is different. Your financials are different. So it has a lot mm-hmm. to do with where you are as well, financially, emotionally, you know, and even your education background, as far as putting all of your systems together and actually running a business, because this, mm-hmm. this is definitely going to be a business. Mm-hmm. And it's hands-on unless you've got that team in place. So any other questions? I'll give everybody a minute if you have any other questions, or put your aha in the chat. You know, what was the big thing that your takeaway from today? My takeaway is, I need to check out some management companies to make what I'm doing even more passive. So that's my big takeaway from today. Anyone else have a big takeaway before we go? Don't forget to tap in to the ins and outs of opening a B&B on Facebook. You can find us also on meetup.com. You can connect with me at kathybinner.com. You can connect with Adam. He put his information in the chat early on. I'll save that on the replay as well. And John, how can folks connect with you?
Thank you. Yeah, you can call me directly. I'll put my phone number in the chat here. And I'll put my email as well. Happy to, you know, converse that way. Also, you can check out my website. I have a brokerage website, which is StireREP.com. We are Stire Real Estate Professionals. And then our management website is StireHospitalityCo.com. I'll put that in the website as well, or the chat as well. My phone number is 614-843-5656. And or you can send me an email, john@thestiregroup.com. So I am available electronically.
Did I get all that right?
You got it all right. You nailed it.
Again, if you want to click on the three little dots next to the chat, you can save the chat or just scroll to that information and take a screen print so you don't lose it. Or go to kathybinner.com, scroll down to the free replay section under my website and click through, and I'll have all of that also saved in the description under the video. All right. I want to say thanks to everyone for tapping in with us tonight. This has been a lot of fun. John, I love chatting with you. I knew you had big things. You're a mover and a shaker. I knew you had lots of things moving there. I'm glad that I got to learn more about what you're doing. I love it. I love it. I was in your neck of the woods the other day visiting a girlfriend, and I was just a street or two over from where you are.
Oh, yeah.
Thank
you so much for having me on. Always a pleasure. And I'm sure we'll be seeing each other soon at a meetup here or there. Actually, the last one, I saw you, but there were so many people I didn't even get a chance to say hi. So, you know, kind of that's how it goes sometimes. But, you know, I really appreciate being on. I did get to say hi to Adam, though, at that one. So, yeah.
I love it. Adam, it's good to see you again.
Always a pleasure.
See you guys out and about. And so we'll see everyone later. And thank you for tapping in tonight. See everyone later.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thanks.